Yeah, a lot can change in just a year or so, including your eyes. Please have your precious gift of sight examined every year.
A message from the American Optometric Association.
Attention listeners, I'm Al Gore and you're not. Global warming, it may seem like an impossible problem, but the Arctic ice is melting, storms are becoming fiercer, the resulting climate change is upsetting invaluable ecosystems, and the pollution is damaging our health. But there is still time. People like yourselves can change their daily habits to make a difference. For more information, go to www.fightglobalwarming.com. Once again, I'm Al Gore, and you're not.
Thank God for that. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It's a Tuesday night time, once again, for Off the Wall. very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm pretty well. How are you?
Well, I'm doing pretty good, I think.
Good.
I think I'm doing better than this administration is doing. I'll say that right now.
I'll say as much as you'll say, but yeah, I'll say.
We can't say this every week, but it seems like we sort of almost have to. But the headline in the Washington Post, a revelation unlike any other in the Russia investigation. If I was writing this, I couldn't come up with crazier scenarios than what is being revealed day by day. And, the people who say, oh, this is a witch hunt, there's nothing there, every week it gets more and more ridiculous to say that, because obviously there's something going on. There has been something. The latest, for those of you listening from the future, who wonder what the next step in our downfall was, this is the Donald Trump Jr. revelations. It's amazing. You know, when Donald Trump Jr. reveals information, it's kind of like, your favorite hip-hop artist releasing a single, because you get three versions and an instrumental in the course of a weekend. And that's pretty much what we got. I think we're in the instrumental right now. But Donald Trump Jr., yeah, you know, oh, no, I wasn't talking to anybody. Well, yeah, actually, I was talking to some people. They weren't Russian. Yeah, they were Russian. And then it just keeps, it's like watching somebody fall down a mountain.
Who's asking?
Today, emails were released that basically show that, yes, in fact, he knew it was somebody affiliated with the Russian government who was trying to give negative information about Hillary Clinton.
Right, but because he was competitive, it was cool. Forget that.
And he has this meeting with two of the higher-ups in the Trump campaign, including his son-in-law, and Trump was in the same building. So you know Trump knew about it. There's no question about any of this anymore. So... Wow, and you may say, it's a logical question. This is the kind of thing that happens during a campaign. You try to find dirt on your competitor. Yeah, fair enough. But what is highly suspicious here is A, lying about it and saying that there was no such collusion, and B, having this kind of contact with agents of a government. And a fairly hostile government, because whatever you might think, we're not allies with Russia. That's just, you can't spin that story and come up with that. We're not. So when those two things come out, it just makes it especially damning.
Yeah, the proximity to leadership domestically and the proximity or lack of distance between individuals that are actually shopping for information, or who are responding to people who are soliciting information. It's pretty damning, yeah.
Pretty damn damning, absolutely. And, you know, I love this line in the Washington Post. And I'm sorry, folks, that, we get our fair amount of email from people who say, how can you support the mainstream media? Well, you know, the media has to support the media, mainstream or not. Alternative, mainstream, you name it, we're all playing the same game. And the information that that comes out through the mainstream media is oftentimes right on the money. And we wouldn't have that information were it not for this media. So, you know, you can look at mistakes they've made in the past. You can look at their corporate ownership and all sorts of things like that and talk yourself out of listening to them. But if you don't listen to them, you're going to not be informed as to what's actually going on. There's so much more we can add to this story. You know, as alternative media, as individuals, we can certainly play a huge part in that. But to dismiss the mainstream media just because there's a few clowns that might ruin it for everybody else, or that there are certain really, really bad examples of mass media, that's a mistake. That's a huge mistake. So, yeah, the Washington Post, they're doing an amazing job uncovering a lot of these stories, as is the New York Times, as are a bunch of others as well. But anyway, I love this line from today's Washington Post. For those who have grown tired of the Russian issue, or who believed it was losing potency, or who thought the biggest surprises were in the past, Tuesday's revelations provided dramatic proof that the investigation is alive with no end in sight. Wow. And you know that Trump is reading that, because he might say he doesn't pay attention to the failing fake media, but he is riveted and panicking and all sorts of things like that. And this is where we prove that we are stronger than the utter garbage and crap that he is bringing to the forefront.
Yeah, and it's a realization that this is going to sort or play out, and we've other issues and areas that need actual attention and that deserve the unity that a lot of people would rather we focus on in this area. But this is going to get the due attention in time, and we'll be able to spend, I think, our time on other issues that actually deserve it, instead of denying this is real or something that's of importance.
Well, I don't know when we're actually going to get to real issues that matter, issues that are important, but it's not going to be anytime soon, not with these people in charge, because they are just so bumbling and corrupt that you can't take your eye off the show that's right in front of you.
It's very entertaining.
It's extremely entertaining, but
not lack excitement.
There are so many things we should be doing.
Indeed, yeah.
We should be improving the infrastructure. We should be improving healthcare, not tearing it down. We should be dealing with climate change. We should be fixing so many things that are wrong. And you know, the Republicans have not accomplished anything. It's July. They haven't done a damn thing. They can say, you know, obstructionism all they want. But it's their own incompetence and opposition to what Americans want that has put them in this position. Because believe me, if they had a mandate, if they had people supporting them, they would be getting things done. They don't, and they're not.
Yeah, and I think that the people that are stepping in, and I think that is going on, but there are people, entities stepping in, and governments stepping in as, in these leadership roles that were basically what we're to fear, and was definitely in the headlines over the weekend. And this leadership, these different issues are moving ahead. You know, there's more competition with transportation and infrastructure. There was already a trajectory for a lot of these ideas and projects before, and like you're saying, the stuff that's continuously coming from the administration is sort of sadly gonna distract from their ability to interact with these other things that are, I guess, ongoing. And what I'm saying is, going to occur without the U.S. or this administration, whether they're involved or not. I'm thinking of like the climate change and climate change agreement. We had the G20 protests over the weekend.
Weren't those fun?
It was really interesting.
We
to
just
see
got back from the, and you know, the putting the Molotov cocktails away,
uh-huh.
Which apparently you can carry on to No, I'm kidding. We weren't there. We didn't do anything. But it's interesting to watch this.
Heartening.
Heartening in a way. I mean, you know, there are always idiots in any demonstration. That's certainly true. But to see so many people turn out and oppose the
something like almost 20,000 people, and maybe almost into the 50s and hundreds over the course of the weekend.
The thing is, you know, if we had that kind of response on a consistent basis, you know, if every day the White House and Congress were surrounded by angry people, like in Venezuela right now, you would see change. You would definitely see change. That is what it takes. But I feel like we kind of just accept things and back down and complain a lot, but we don't actually go out into the streets and make our voices heard. We think that's a waste of time, and it really isn't.
We coast through it a bit in a lot of situations where our voices would actually matter more, but we tend to let entities speak for us, all lobbyists and so on and so forth.
It's,
but it's instructive, you know, and there's something to be said for it. It's different when you're out in the streets,
mm-hmm.
And it actually disrupts people like the First Lady. I'm not condoning or saying this, but she couldn't get out of her hotel, you know, things like that.
So, yeah,
boo-hoo,
she couldn't get out of her damn hotel.
You kind of have to take notice.
Where was she going to go anyway?
Logistically, I know.
These people
kind of
live
stuck
in hotels. They don't ever leave hotels.
They don't. They sure love them. But, of course, yeah, I mean, that was a logical outcome, and we're not used to seeing that. You can disrupt, and it does make a statement.
A huge statement. There was a quote just on that topic. I think it was from either Donald Jr. or his other son, Eric, about going to Russia. And yeah, I've seen Russia. I've seen it all from golf clubs, golf courses to country clubs. That's it for them. That's all their world encompasses.
It's a real street level grit.
They can't conceive of anything beyond that world.
Uh-huh.
That is what we are dealing with right now. It's so sad, but funny at the same time. But yes, so she couldn't get out of her hotel. But you know, the street protest, though,
people were taken
to prove what, you know, what we're saying here.
Yeah.
Pick a target. Just as an exercise, your local bagel shop or something, and get, four of your people to stand outside and protest something, to pick something. I don't know. Maybe they don't have poppy seed bagels, or maybe...
Everything bagels are not real bagels. How about that?
Well, that's a bigger issue.
You're right.
That's
that
the
is
whole bagel industry. But
actually true.
Maybe you want Bialys, who has Bialys around here? There aren't many people who aren't in bagel shops that do. Pick a cause. The thing is, you just have as few as four people standing outside from even a few hours, you're going to get a response. You're going to get results.
Yeah.
The guy is going to get so annoyed with you, he's going to change something just to get you out of there. Now, okay, I'm sorry, bagel guy, that you had to be the sacrificial lamb here. But you change that. Okay, now let's pick an entire block of a community, right? And make a change there. We don't like the double yellow line. We want a dotted line. I don't know, something. You get 50 people to stand around until that gets fixed. That will get fixed. That will get addressed. All right? So you just keep building on this. If people are there, if they're present, if they're visible, if they're loud, if they're in the way, things change, and that's what we fail to realize. We accept we don't go out there and put ourselves on the line.
Showing up. Mm-hmm. That was something I heard a lot this weekend. Showing up.
Showing up.
It matters. And it scales up, mm-hmm. like what you're saying. It's something that you can do on many different scales throughout your experience in the world. And, whatever that cause or change you're affecting, that deems it is, it's the better for it. And it's amazing the speed with which things can be accomplished, in the way you're saying.
Yeah. So, hopefully people wake up a little bit more and do things like that.
I did want to say people were really, really, they were taking some hits. It's not easy. I'm not saying, don't get what we're saying. Don't interpret it as, that this is simple. Or that it's an easy, you can cruise. That's what we're saying. It's mm-hmm. not, sitting on cruise control and letting lobbyists deal with it. It's really being out there and getting some bruises, some scrapes. I mean, people with the water cannons, people were like, you'd see them with their backs to it, just getting hit with this incredible, powerful crowd control.
It's not fun to get hit with a water cannon.
No.
It might look like fun. No, it really doesn't even look like fun. It's not fun.
No.
It's not fun at all.
No, it's not. No. It's very serious, and we can kind of, even when you're watching it from afar, we can kind of forget how really, painful a lot of that work is, but it's work worth doing.
And it goes beyond that, too. You have rubber bullets being fired. You have cops beating people with all kinds of weapons.
They poke you. They have the batons, and they hold the smaller part in their fists, and then it extends. And, you get poked with that? That's serious.
Yeah.
That's no joke.
The difference, though, is in Europe, people fight back. And we see the headlines here, oh my God, a couple hundred cops got injured. Maybe a couple hundred cops deserve to get injured if they're going to attack crowds.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that we don't even entertain the thought of here. But guess what? They're people too. And that's another thing that that the super pro police people are always trying to tell us.
Maybe.
That they're human beings. Okay, they're human beings. They need to act like human beings and be treated like human beings, which means... In conflicts, they take a hit as well as the people that they're attacking. So,
and maybe you should have thought of that before you put them, made their working conditions difficult,
uh-huh.
and putting the burden on them with your in these kind of authoritarian solutions instead of hearing people and letting them be active and demonstrate. It was amazing to see, though, and a lot to be learned.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for humanizing as much as possible. So when you have law enforcement appear as human beings, it's very different than when they appear as these helmeted armed thugs that don't even have faces and no, they might as well be robots, you know, and to be treated with such reverence when they are the aggressors and they are attacking people without consequence and oftentimes getting away with it, getting away with shooting people, getting away with killing people. It's such a different culture over there and over here, and it's something that we need to look at.
Yeah, yeah, they're definitely at an advantage because they have a lot of equipment, they have a lot of things going into it. So I mean, for them to get injured, yeah, that is people definitely fighting back. But to say the playing field, I mean, you've got machines spraying people, mm-hmm. And it is practically robotic. You know, these robotic walls we're starting to see, the tools and toys of this power or this executive branch is it's hard to watch because people really do have to fight in the face of it, and we're not used to that level of resistance, mm-hmm. and it's definitely something to think about because you know this is the extension. This is how people are controlled, and you know the thing that we face, mm-hmm. when you're exercising your right to assemble.
Yeah, and you know, I think we are controlled so much here in this country. The way we think about these issues. You know, I was wondering this the other day. So many people walk around with NYPD shirts that aren't cops.
Yeah.
I mean, what is up with that? Why do people glorify police departments so much in this country? And I don't see that anywhere else in the world. It's, you know,
it's romanticized.
Yeah, but what is it exactly that they're romanticizing? Is it the control over people? Is it the weapons? Is it the brutality that occasionally is attached to this? Or is it actually a desire to help people? If that's the case, you know, I'd like to see more FDNY shirts or, you know, Ambulance Corps. I don't see very many of those. It's just kind of a weird thing that we have in this country. And people ask us about this when we travel. What's with the glorification of the... And just the I mentioned the reverence before. We had a horrible tragedy in the city this past week where a cop was executed by a lunatic who just walked up to her car and shot her in the head. And that is you know the worst possible scenario you could imagine, but it also kind of illustrates the deep gaps between cultures here. For instance, you know the mayor of New York, de Blasio, is getting all kinds of attacks and criticisms for being anti-cop, which I'm trying to figure out. Where is this coming from? The guy attends the funeral. The guy is nothing but respectful for cops, and yet he's... If you read the comments, not only on the Newsday comment board, which is the worst of the worst, but from the NYPD themselves, from the union people, from the representatives, they're saying the most vile things about this guy, that it's his fault that this happened, that he's encouraging violence against cops. What do they want from this guy? He already is super respectful of them. They are the most protected group of people in New York. Tragedies like this are tragedies. There's no other way to describe them. How do you blame that on a mayor? How do you blame that on anybody but the person who did it? It makes you wonder, what is it they want? What more do they want? You know, they can basically get away with almost anything. They have all this protection. They have people bowing down to them, but it's not enough. It's never enough.
Yeah, it's undying and unquestioning support, I think, that they're after. And I think it is really good. I think there's a positive way to look at his leadership was needed on the world stage in some regards. Felt it a priority.
You're referring to what he was in. He went to Germany to visit his son. His son is in Germany. He went to Germany, and there were protests there. And there's nothing wrong with going to Germany and visiting your son and even going to a protest against the president that you are opposed to.
Yeah, it's kind of associating something specific to that on a larger stage.
But what was he supposed to do? I mean, he was supposed to take the bullet for this poor cop. I mean, he was at the funeral. What do you people want? He showed all the respect he could possibly show, and he's still being raked over the coals. And you know, there's been all this hostility over the years because he basically stood up to their bullying. And asks for investigations when there is evidence of wrongdoing, and basically, you know, refusing to just believe that cops are always 100% correct and should never be questioned. And that, to me, is a true leader.
Yeah, and I think he should, as a leader for all the people, I think, be neutral. And if they're coming at him in the context, they're using the scenario just as much as they're interpreting his actions to be using the scenario.
Mm-hmm.
You know, using his death to be a top, you know, for them to dust off the top 10, you know, requests they have for some sort of resource or legal mechanism that they don't already have. You know, it just becomes, you know, a way for them to bargain for even more than they already have as far as support and reverence and all of this, you know, stuff that we just do automatically. And another thing I want to say about power and the way this authority is wielded in the context of the protests. In Germany, the G20 protesters were criticized for covering their faces. And a lot of these riot police have coverings on their faces,
mm-hmm.
or they have emblems. Actually, it's always different, but different numbers, different shapes and colors to, so they can know and identify who is of what rank and what purpose within their tactics.
But
so
they have to protect themselves.
But it's not, it's a code.
Yeah.
It's not something you can really decipher if you're watching, or you're a protester yourself. And so in Germany, I guess it's illegal to cover your face, which is, I think, interesting.
Unless you're a cop.
And or there's some restriction or rule they made for this particular action. Regardless, the insane thing to me is that they're also lumped in that if they were covering their faces, they're a part of some group.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a group. Black Bloc is a tactic to use coverings and just a black clothing so that you're not uniquely identifiable in the larger group of protesters. So it's very interesting to hear how they're then the reason more riot police, and they became, because they had covered their faces, they became the reason more authority was brought in and sort of clamping down on the scenario there,
uh-huh.
which is distinct in a lot of ways, and it's also brought up here. This tactic becomes associated with something else, like anarchists or something, to make them a bad guy, when really it is the people protesting using a variety of techniques to resist this overwhelming authority and you know, amount of resources that they have,
mm-hmm.
In the face of an action.
Yeah, you know, and I don't want to make it unclear. I support cops as people trying to do good. I've seen so many instances of cops doing their job well. And by well, I mean, you know, when they're there to help, when they're there to protect you, because that is their job. Their job is to serve you. You know, not as your servant, but as somebody to make sure that, you know, you're kept safe from harm, society in general is kept safe from harm, not to order you around. This is why I always get upset when people say, he refused to obey the cops' orders. You're not my superior, you don't order me around, you don't tell me, oh, you must, you know, do this or that, unless there is a compelling reason as a safety officer to keep me safe. To direct me in a particular way, but to bark out commands like you're some kind of, you know, is this the military or something? No, that's not our society. It never will be. So that bothers me when people change it into that.
It morphs. It becomes in someone's interpretation or in their mind's eye or even in a moment of
mm-hmm.
their day at work becomes all this allowance and sort of perceived authority when it's not exactly the structural way it should be. I mean, they work for us as citizens.
I see cops as members of the community, and you know, I know that's not true most of the time, but you know, if it were true, ideally what I would see is somebody that I recognize, somebody who I would know, who would know me, and who came from the area and had the same interest, supposedly, that I had, unless I was a criminal. And, you know, we respect each other. That's how it should be. That's how it works. When it's an outside force, you know, like Tiananmen Square style, where you get the soldiers to come in from a distant province who don't know you and have no problem brutalizing you. Yeah, then all of a sudden the game changes and you have this adversarial relationship. And that's not good for anybody. It's not good, certainly not good for the people, and it's definitely not good for the cops, because the people will at some point react, even in this country.
It definitely limits the outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, you know, I don't believe in this blind hatred a lot of people have towards the cops.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that bugs me, because I don't
have reasons.
Yeah,
people have reasons.
Have reasons for what? Blind hatred?
Well, I mean, you know, individuals may have, you know, grievances and run-ins and all kinds
right.
of stories. Of course, there's reasons people become full of blind rage.
Yeah, but I can never support rage against somebody that you don't even know just because of what they're wearing, or you know, where they come from or something
right.
like that. But a monolithic mass where there is no identity, where there's just this weaponry and this massive force of, you know, of militarism, that is something that, yeah, you can feel antagonistic towards from the start without having any formal introduction. And that's unfortunately where we are heading with all the militarization of cops. So, you know, I hope we don't move in that direction. You know, there is going to be conflict. There is going to be back and forth, and it's not always going to be civil. But that's part of the human race, and that's something we have to always deal with one way or another. Doesn't help when everybody is shooting at each other, and it's, you know, you feel like you're about to be killed by a civilian because you're so on edge that you have to shoot first, and you get away with it because, well, you were in fear for your life. That's a scenario we see more and more in this country, and it's certainly not healthy.
Yeah, that's not well suited to increase in tensions or actions, because that's obviously a sign of a very broken occupation. You
mm-hmm.
know, if that is so normalized and so widely accepted and not something we're actually looking at to fix. Another funny thing from the G20 protests was Greenpeace had the boats out. And the police boats were having a lot of trouble because they were a little bit bigger. So the little boats were, like, all around and, like, just doing circles around these Coast Guard boats and police boats. It was pretty funny to watch the cat and mouse
uh-huh.
of that. And it's a reminder of the many different types of actions that are at people's fingertips.
Look, these are healthy expressions. And, yeah, I know people are going to not like them. They're going to be inconvenient, and occasionally, you know, there's going to be some throwing of objects and things like that. But in the end, it's a healthier display than where we are moving right now, where it's basically submit or die. That's not a healthy outcome for anybody. And I think we need to embrace that more and to encourage that more. You know, we're so panicked by all the what ifs, and when you think about it. We just had this horrible tragedy yesterday where a plane crashed in Mississippi, and what is it, 16 Marines got killed.
Yeah, this is really
Marines
sad. 16
Marines killed. Now, you know, not to minimize this in any way. I think it is being minimized.
Yeah.
Imagine if one Marine were killed in what is described as a terrorist act somewhere. It would be nonstop coverage. You know, if somebody walked up to a Marine and you know, shot them or blew themselves up or something like that. That would be 24-hour news. But 16 Marines dying in a plane crash in Mississippi, well, that's sad, but let's move on and talk about something else. There is no real coverage of this. And you have to ask yourself, why? Is it simply because of the way this happens? Because there's not enough fear? We're not going to be in a cargo plane, I guess, in the near future, so we're not going to panic ourselves over that. It puts it in perspective. Terrorism is something that we're obsessed with and that we're constantly believing is around the corner. When in fact, you know, if you look at the statistics, you have a much better chance of being struck by lightning. And the vast majority of people who are affected by terrorism are the people that we claim to be afraid of, namely Muslims, by like something like 80%. So, you know, there's a lot of things here that just don't add up, that aren't correct. And, you know, we tend to forget this. I mean, you know, terrorists today have just figured out that driving vehicles into crowds of people can cause casualties. We're not talking about sophistication here. It's a very rare thing when you see sophisticated terrorist acts, at least in the West. And most of them are really, really clumsy and, you know, wind up with fairly few casualties. Usually the terrorists themselves is one of them. But, you know, it's not like it is on TV. It's not like something that we really have to stay up nights and worry about. There are so many other things to worry about that are affecting us in other ways.
Yeah, and I think the rush to fight, and there's like definitely oversights, and there are ways that we could be spending money in the military that are more worthwhile. I'm not sure. I mean, it's very, very early to even like speculate on what exactly was going on with that. And the way you get information about a military investigation is entirely different. The NTSB isn't involved. There's
really?
Yeah, it's a military plane crash, so the NTSB is not actually at all part of the investigation because of that. Anyway, we could talk about this a lot, but I think that, you know, the $90 million in missiles we sent to Syria could have been spent on maintenance and things like that, or getting new helicopters and new cargo planes in development, and so they can be tested and put into use, and so that if it, you know, was an accident, for instance, because of maintenance in some way, or if it's, like I said, munitions, because this thing also carried, it could have had armaments of mm-hmm. some kind and fuel, depending on the configuration. So whatever kind of haste was involved or could have led to mishandling of any of that.
Yeah, it's a big deal. A plane comes out of the sky like that in the middle of a flight. Something serious happened.
Yeah, some of the accounts of it was something midair and then it spiraled
and
crashed.
It happened yesterday. I only found out about it today.
Yeah.
So, you know, imagine if it was something else where, you know, some nefarious actor were involved, how incredibly fixated on this we would be.
Comprehensive, yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of, we're used to that, and that's why I think the investigation and what we actually hear about how that happened will be very, very interesting, because the military has a way of dealing with a lot of, with casualties, obviously, and I sure hope it isn't, you know, treated in any way less than, like you said, like we would treat a commercial incident
of
this scale.
I'm really surprised NTSB is not involved in the investigation. That is insane. Because
I hope they support it.
They can offer a lot of expertise. And,
yeah.
And, you know, when planes are plummeting into neighborhoods, I think the people in the neighborhoods deserve to know what in God's name is going on.
Yeah, this is a soybean field, but, I mean, that's somebody's neighborhood.
That's true. Hey, our phone lines are open, 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872, if you have anything to say, to comment on, to correct us on. We get many corrections, and be going through a couple of those in a little bit, I think. Speaking of airplanes, though, I don't know if you heard about this. On Friday, the FAA is investigating an apparent near miss involving an Air Canada flight at San Francisco's airport. Flight AC-759 from Toronto was cleared to land on a runway last Friday, but the pilot inadvertently lined up for a taxiway where four aircraft were waiting to depart.
Whoa.
Yeah. FAA is currently investigating the distance between the Air Canada aircraft and the aircraft lined up on the taxiway, which runs parallel to the runway. Basically, audio recording emerged of what are said to be last Friday's communications between air traffic controllers and pilots at San Francisco's airport. In it, a male voice believed to be that of the Air Canada pilot is heard saying that there are lights on the runway. One of the air traffic controllers replies that there are no other planes there. Another unidentified voice is then heard saying, "Where's this guy going? He's on the taxiway." The air traffic controller then apparently realized the danger of the Air Canada plane crashing into the four aircraft on the ground and ordered the pilot to pull up and make another approach. A pilot from one of the planes on the ground is then heard saying, United 1, Air Canada flew directly above us. Retired United Airlines Captain Ross Amer said, if it is true, what happened probably came close to the greatest aviation disaster in history. If you could imagine an Airbus colliding with four passenger aircraft wide bodies full of fuel and passengers, then you can imagine how horrific this could have been. That's last Friday, San Francisco. That's the near misses that we're dealing with. Wow.
And you still had to go through crazy amounts of security and stress.
Uh-huh.
Imagine sitting on the runway and getting buzzed by a large aircraft that is on the wrong landing strip.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Incompetence will get us far quicker than malice, I think.
Yeah.
Seems to be the theme.
Yeah, we have to skill needs to be directed to where it is most effective.
Yes. Hey, I want to read you, by the way, phone lines are still open, 631-632-9872, if anyone is out there. I want to read you a piece from this newspaper I picked up when I was over in London with you last month. Remember, I said I wanted to read this on the air. I just found it today.
I remember that.
Yeah, because it just illustrates how the British are completely oblivious to everything. They're just in their own world.
Uh-huh.
And this was a story called Catch Me Kate. Apparently...
Duchess of...
Yeah, you know, I don't know her full name, and they're just calling her Kate here as if I'm supposed to know...
Kate Middleton.
Okay, fine, but what is she, the Duchess of
Cornwall?
Kilkenny, or... I'm not even... Okay, fine, whatever, I'll go read the story the way it is. She's fallen at the first. Okay, I don't know what that means. Royal Ascot hadn't even got underway yesterday when Prince Edward's wife stumbled and almost landed in the Duchess of Cambridge's lap. Yeah, she tripped and almost fell into somebody's lap. It's on page 3. It's on page 3 uh-huh. of this Metro newspaper. Quick-thinking Kate, 35, because you have to know how old she is.
Mm-hmm.
Quick-thinking Kate, 35, reached up to catch Sophie, Countess of Wessex. Kate is the Duchess of Cambridge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I got it.
Yeah.
And the clumsy one is the Countess of Wessex.
Wessex.
What do you get when you're a countess?
Wessex.
Do you get, like, you know, at Price Club, do you get, like, you know, the express line or something? Or
you get to participate in this kind of stuff.
All right.
That's for sure.
Okay, so quick-thinking Kate, 35 years old, reached up to catch Sophie, Countess of Wessex, as the 52-year-old, I know you were wondering how old the Countess of Wessex was, the 52-year-old fell forward while stepping out of their horse-drawn carriage. There's so many things here that I can't identify with.
Yes.
Leaving both in fits of laughter, because they'd both been drinking heavily.
Some juleps, some gin and tonics were... Oh, man.
The opening day yesterday was also attended by the Queen, Prince Philip, Sophie's husband, Prince Edward, and Prince William. Wait, Sophie's got two husbands? Hold on a second. Attended by the Queen, Prince uh-huh. Philip, Sophie's husband, Prince Edward. Oh, and Prince William. Prince William's married to Kate, right? The Duchess of Cambridge. I know this much.
Yes.
Okay. And he's going to be King Billy someday.
King Willie.
Okay, fine. A quirky touch came from, in case this isn't quirky enough, a quirky touch came from Bake Off chef Cherish Finden. She spent 100 hours creating a hat made from macaroons, commissioned by Coral Bookmaker in honor of the Queen. Retro girl brand the Tootsie Rollers brought vintage glamour to the occasion.
That sounds like roller derby.
It's a fairy tale here. Before the racing, a minute's silence was held for victims and survivors of the Grenfell Tower fire and the London and Manchester terror attacks.
Yeah.
I mean, I just love how, yeah, okay, we're having fun, you know, giggling and everything, but in the end, the world really sucks and we have to have a moment of silence. That's how the story ends.
Wow.
Brilliant. Oh, we have a phone call. Let's see who is out there. Hang on. Good evening. You are on Off the Wall. Are you there? Is anyone there? Actually, you know what? I didn't hit the on-air button.
You're on the wall.
Okay, now I think you're on the air.
Yeah, hello. My name's Ken Churchill. How are you? I've been listening to your dialogue, and I find it was a very excellent dialogue, and it's very encouraging.
Well, thank you. Which part in particular? We said many things.
Well, yeah, about protesting and sacrifice. And I just wanted to mention that with so many young people out there trying hard, try not to, please don't overlook your economic power in the digital world.
Yes. Do you have specific examples of how they could exercise that power?
Well, Martin Luther King nearly freed black people over a bus strike in Montgomery, Alabama, and changed a lot of lives. And they used economic power.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In the digital world, that can be multiplied.
Yes.
Across the nation.
Yeah. That goes for things you contribute to in the donation realm, but also in your everyday purchases or services.
You know, if you want to have an impact on Exxon in the digital world, you can speak to every young person in the country, unify them, and have an impact on, say, Exxon, but for a specific reason to be determined by your generation.
Yeah, I think the real problem is figuring out what to do first, what to do next, and that's what we need help with.
Well, it takes a network that you must create yourself and probably have already, and if it's unified in a national level, you'd be very effective.
Yes, most definitely.
If you haven't done already, look what you did in the Obama election. Millennials, it was incredible.
Yeah,
a generation had never done that. So digital power is where it's at for your people. In 1972, I was arrested by the United States Army. I'm an old protester.
Wow.
The teeth went, you know.
Wait. You got arrested by the Army in 1972? How'd you do that?
No, excuse me, 1970. It's a lot of years ago.
Okay, 1970, wow.
Right. It pertained to, I coordinated the effort to destroy Selective Service paperwork, and not the draft card. The real paperwork in the file cabinets. We had the names and addresses of the the army to be assembled, recruited and assembled. Well, we destroyed it.
How did you do that?
Well, it took the help of a Catholic priest by the name of Father Berrigan, and a Jesuit priest who had the fame it took to coordinate it. I came up with the plan. The army knew it, that I developed a plan to dismantle an army before it was created. It was pure preemptive strike. They arrested me, but that's neither here nor there.
Uh-huh.
I'm just trying to let you know where I came from and what my generation was.
No, you're the real deal, and that's an inspiration to people now who think, you know, people think they don't have power, and I think what you're trying to communicate is that every individual does have power.
They do. They have economic power. And by using economics as a weapon to get what you want, you're less subject to arrest or to get clubbed in the head. And I've heard millennials say they don't want to get clubbed in the head. I heard one millennial say that.
Well, most people don't want to get clubbed in the head. That's true. But you don't always get clubbed in the head. Sometimes you just get tear gassed.
Right.
I've said that and felt that way.
The world has never been in the situation to release human intelligence to the degree that your generation can.
So you're talking about leaks and things like that, the information, just releasing the information.
Well, the government has its own intelligence organization, and I'm sure that your generation has an intelligence organization here and there, but it has to be coordinated and more unified and with more fixed objectives and using economic power. You're in a position to hurt people economically. You really are in the digital world. Like I said, we've used Exxon as an example, but it could be anything.
Uh-huh.
It could even be in a local level like you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, that damn bagel story.
You're going before front of the bagel store, right?
Yeah.
But once you coordinate, well, that's where you're building a grassroots network there. But as it reaches the level where you want to have an impact on the entire street, it can be done digitally in this world. And I'm sure you know that. It's just that I wish you luck with effective use of the digital power that you already have.
All right. We're going to need it. And I hope we have you to continue fighting with us.
Oh, you know, I enjoy your show. Hey, let me leave you with this.
Okay.
A while back, I did a YouTube film. And I have a lung problem, so I'm a little short of breath. But I'm very old. But a while back, it was just before, just slightly before the Occupy movement started in New York City.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I had done a YouTube show and posted it. And it was about, in part, about the Occupy movement in Argentina.
Okay,
I see.
And, yeah, and I put it up on there. We don't know if it had an impact on people in New York or if it didn't. It never had a tremendous amount of views. But on this particular YouTube film, it's a short documentary, it says people that are about to be evicted, they can say if you're going to be evicted on 155th Street in Harlem, you don't need the help of someone in California or Ohio. You need the help of the people on 155th Street in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to be evicted, you go to every house on that street and tell them you're going to be evicted. And people can assemble in front of that door when the sheriffs come. And that was my national plan. Because it was a street-by-street plan to help people not get evicted. And I went up on the internet, and then nothing came from it. Nothing happened. But it could have. That's all I can say, it could have. And whatever impact the film had on the Occupy movement, I just feel glad I took the time to do the film.
Absolutely.
It's at Ken Churchill, YouTube.com. If you search that, it comes up. All my other films come up, too.
Okay, we'll take a look. Thanks for calling in, and thanks for just keeping the faith.
Yeah, I appreciate your listening.
What's your first name again?
I'm Emmanuel, and that's Kyle.
Okay. And I really enjoyed your dialogue, and it's very encouraging, and you offer a lot of hope to people to get out of the situation that we're in. And I congratulate young people for getting out there and protesting against the Trump administration.
Thank you, and I'm glad we reached you. That's inspirational to me.
Okay.
Take care.
Have a good day.
That was a good call.
Yeah, you know, that was really pleasant.
That's something. That's just an example of the kinds of listeners that are out there. And didn't he sound good on our new phone system?
Yeah, he sounded really terrific.
Sounded like he was right in the room.
Yeah, it was like we were having a little chat right in direct proximity. But, gosh, that was amazing. Glad he's listening and appreciate the acknowledgement. I was tentative at first. I was waiting for a but it ended up amazing story. So.
And there are millions of people out there that feel strongly about things, that want to express themselves, that think they can't. They think they can't influence others, and we all influence each other. You just got to keep speaking. That's what's so important these days. Hey, I wanted to read this this letter that had a couple of corrections as we close out today. Emmanuel and Kyle, as an avid listener of Off the Wall since its inception in 2003. Wow, you deserve a medal for that. Off the Hook since 2000. You know, we began in 1988, but I'm not going to dwell on that. And a 2,600 reader since 2002, and we started that in 1984, so you got some back issues to catch up on. I absolutely love your radio shows and magazine.
We have lots of them,
yes, for your perusement.
Let me know.
As an Army officer and someone who grew up in the Appalachian Mountains of the Commonwealth of Virginia, my opinion regarding firearms and politics differs greatly from yours at times.
Oh, boy.
Hey, no.
Am I judging?
Yeah, you're judging. And
I'm judging.
The tone is not something that
you're
is
right.
constructive.
You're right. It's not welcome.
No. I take great satisfaction, however, in always listening to your show to hear your side, opinion, and commentary regarding all things. And that, to me, right there, is awesome.
Yeah, that is actually, that's really positive.
If we can do the same thing, I think, you know, we'd be accomplishing something as well. Now, oftentimes we fall short on that.
We work really hard, we do our best.
We try.
And I'm not always, have lots of different moments where I would prefer to say things in a more succinct way, but it's all just a conversation. It's just a work in progress, you know?
All right. We don't watch the National Network nearly enough.
Well, and we go off script, okay?
They're not even still on the air, are they? Is there a National Network? I don't think there is. I don't even know. TNN, remember? I think they turned into something.
I have no idea.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to.
Stick to the script.
Yeah, I got to get back to this letter.
We got
to
be on the script.
Recently on Off the Wall, an errant comment was stated during your conversation about the Second Amendment and gun rights versus gun violence. Emmanuel stated around, wow, this is great when it's time to the second, 25:28. The full paragraph is included for transparency. I like being being the subject of investigations.
Yes.
You can go to any platform anywhere. You can find pacifists, people in the Green Party, and in every single possible political realm, you will find someone who is violent, somebody who is a nut job. I'm quoting me. It feels really weird. That is just a fact. And if you attach to that the ease in our country of getting weapons and a state like Virginia, where you don't even need a license to conceal carry, it's no wonder that these things happen. And in fact, the wonder is that they don't happen all the time. I did say that. I remember saying that. Although, okay, and this is back to the letter writer here. Although I agree it is an increasing problem that disturbed terrorists are able to obtain and use firearms in violent displays, I would like to correct the part about the Commonwealth of Virginia not requiring a license to conceal carry. This is not accurate, whereby a concealed handgun permit, CHP, is required by state law in order to conceal carry a handgun outside of one's own place of abode or the curtilage thereof. That's a word I don't think I've ever used before. Additionally, the disqualifications for a Virginia CHP are far greater than the requirements to obtain one. I stand corrected. I'm not even going to challenge this or look it up because you know what you're talking about. You're from Virginia. And I admit, when I say something about guns, I don't know what I'm talking about because I don't know guns. I just know my feelings about guns. I can't say semi-automatic, automatic, hollowed out, sawed off, whatever. I don't know the terminology. And I certainly don't know every state's nuances as far as what's allowed and what's not allowed. I can just speak to my emotional feelings about certain things that affect me and affect the people around me. And that's where my opinions come in as far as gun laws, gun culture, obsession, interpretation of the Second Amendment, that kind of thing.
Yeah, there's a couple different ways that works. And in like Washington, I think it's, you know, you don't necessarily have to have a license, I think, for a rifle, but a pistol's different in his state, maybe the same as far as the distinction between types of weapons. And concealed carry is different than just owning a pistol. Different states might not allow or allow you to own a pistol or without a permit.
We can dwell on these things forever. Yeah. It takes us away from, I think, what the main conversation is. But I appreciate
you were being illustrative.
I appreciate being corrected on this because it is an important.
Right.
I don't want to be spreading misinformation. So thank you for that. The writer goes on to say. Further, the comments regarding using firearms to overthrow a tyrannical government, I believe, are misplaced. Rather, the central component of the Second Amendment is self-defense to protect oneself, family, and property, as stated by the Illinois Supreme Court. I would like to agree that that's the case, that's what the Second Amendment is referring to. However, people specifically in the NRA repeatedly say that the purpose of carrying arms is to protect yourself against a tyrannical government. If we can get that stricken and just labeled as complete nonsense, we might be a step further towards having an actual constructive dialogue on what's responsible and what's not responsible. Anyway, this letter concludes. Thank you for your time. I look forward to hearing more of your opinions and commentary regarding all things. Keep spreading the hacker spirit. And thank you, Sesrin, for sending us that awesome email. And if you want to send us an awesome email, you can do so too. otw@2600.com. That's our email address. We would love to hear from you. We really would, regardless of what you say, how you feel about us, or anything like that. All opinions are as always, welcome. And that's going to pretty much do it for us here tonight.
What even constitutes an organized militia? Like, if you have a uniform, does that make you an army within the country?
We don't have time to even get into that, Kyle, because we're out of time. And unfortunately, we'll have to... We'll have to come back to that at a future show. So, until then, this is Emmanuel for Kyle. Have yourselves a great night, and keep thinking strong. Good night. Well,